Hey, this is Amon Green. You're listening to season two of the Fragging and Lagging podcast.
20-10 touchdown. Roll back that beautiful bean footage and you'll find it.
I can't hear a thing in the game. It's like, hey, there's a friend request. Hey, there's a friend request.
All right, this bastard is on my, okay, GTFO, bitch.
All right, everybody, here it comes. Sit back and enjoy the Fragging and Lagging podcast. Hi, everybody. Guess what? We're back. Season 2, Episode 2 of the Fragging and Lagging podcast. As usual, this is Bobby or Junkhead. Call me whatever you want, as long as you call me friend. And then there's the homie that makes this thing go, Joaquin Blaze, the Beast from Bruges. How you doing, brother?
Hey, man. Your intro gets better every time.
I try. We're doing this on the fly.
Yo, yeah, we're doing that. Oh, my God. We got an amazing guest today. I know you're a bit fanboying over it.
But really, yeah, go ahead.
For me as a European, it's a bit less, the guest is a bit less popular, but I looked him up. I saw he was from, he started out in the NFL, which is awesome, which is cool. You know, I grew up watching movies about the NFL and I did watch Super Bowl here and there. I watched the latest one a few weeks back. I want you to introduce
you. You want me to do this, man?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, the man that made a lot of people money in fantasy league, the Doak Walker Award finalist, first team Big 12, first team Big 8. I mean, first team everything. Four time Pro Bowler, NFC Offensive Player of the Year, and Green Bay Packer Hall of Fame, who's rushed for close to 92,000 yards in his career, received almost 3,000 yards. The one, the only, the man, the beast from Green Bay. How about that? Amon Green, how you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. Hey, that was a pretty dope introduction right there. Hey, I like it.
Wait, when we were talking earlier about your fantasy league, Junkhead, didn't you call him the car wash?
Yeah, that's right.
It's automatic.
You might as well call Amon Green the car wash because he was automatic back in the day. So he's still automatic in a different way.
Exactly. I looked that up, though. I looked up because everybody was telling me that, how automatic I was. And so I looked it up, and my average yards per game were like 20.8 per game. So I was like, what? It was a website that I archived it here. In the United States, for all fantasy football players over the years.
So for you guys and gals out there that do not have Amon Green on your team, but he made you guys lose, it sucks to be you. But, you know, once again, we want to thank Justin allowing to put us in touch with you to have you on the podcast. So thank you, Justin. And I think everyone should be excited about hearing your story because you go from being a college stud, NFL stud, that's transitioned into something that we're kind of more familiar with. So please, the floor is yours, Amon, and we will humbly sit back and enjoy this ride. So,
yeah, well, shoot, where should I start? I'm going to start early like I usually do. I start, you know, when I was 5, 6 years old, with the gaming side of it, but sports was right there with it. You know, I was playing. My dad was an IT guy at Northrop Aviation in Los Angeles, California, and so he worked on computers, VCRs, any electronic equipment. He would pick, you know, have to bring home from work and work on it. So between me standing over his shoulder watching him solder iron wires and pieces of a computer back together, he one day brought home a ColecoVision, and that's when the gaming started with Donkey Kong and Zaxxon on ColecoVision. And then during the day, you know, being in Los Angeles, you know, you got good weather. So I was outside playing in the street. We have a little part of the patch of the grass called the island that was in our neighborhood. And so that's where the football basically got started and developed. And we play full tackle football. And the age range, and this is where kind of my grit, and I say my pain threshold started to get work on, along with my two older brothers, my dad and my stepdad, you know, the way they raised me, you know, watching sports and, you know, watching football, watching baseball, playing on the island the first time I was probably like 6 years old. And it's from me, my age, all the way up to 13-year-olds. We're all playing tackle football together. And so there's no, you know, just like it's no crying in baseball, it's definitely no crying in football. But that first time I'm lighting these dudes up, and one of the 13-year-olds just punched me in my stomach or punched me in my chest because I'm killing them. I'm running. I probably score like 2 or 3 touchdowns. I'm 6. These guys are 12, 13-year-old. And they like, I guess one of the guys didn't like that a 6-year-old was chopping them up, scoring touchdowns, juking people, running people over. And so I took the hit and I took off. I stood off to the side and cried it out. And because there was nobody there, you know, I knew I was a smart kid. So I was like, okay, I can't fight this dude. So let me just go over here, take a knee, cry it out, get the pain out because it hurt. It stung. And I got right back in the game and went back to running guys over and tackling guys hard. And I wasn't afraid of nobody. And it was just one of those things, like a learning moment, you know, in my young childhood. This was, Los Angeles, California. What's your name?
Blaze. Yeah,
Blaze. Blaze. Yeah, Blaze. So Los Angeles, California, in the mid-80s, that's where it was gang territory. I know. I think in Europe, really? they call them syndicates, maybe, you know, like, you know, games for teams.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So there was the same thing in California. So me being around that element, it basically, you know, I had to be aware of certain things. I couldn't wear certain colors, you know, which was blue or red. You had to be careful because they would think you were a gang member. And I'm like, nah, I'm scared of my mom and dad before I call myself a football player. I was like, you know, but then that's where football, like I said, football there, that's where it basically begun, and my toughness begun, because we would be outside all day, every day playing tackle football. Like I said, young kids versus teenagers. And it was nothing for me to, you know, run a guy over and then flip the ball, flip sides and be a strong safety and just blow up a guy like Ronnie Lott. I was a 49ers fan,
gosh.
That's who I would emulate. But then, you know, from football to baseball, in the right after that, probably when I was 10, that's when baseball started, and then I got school, I got sports, I got video games, and the video games aspect was just one of those things. At that time, was just more of a casual thing. It was like when I didn't have a whole lot of homework. And I had friends that were able to come over and we hang out. We sit there and play Mario Brothers or 10-Yard Fight, you know, all day long. And that was little side bets. But we were embedding money. We were just betting pride, trash talking at that time and who was better. And we would play Tecmo Bowl, 10-Yard Fight, a double dribble was the basketball game at that time. And we just had fun, you know. And then sports, like I said, as long as my grades are right, my mom and dad were, you know, happy with that. Then I just kept getting good grades because then that helped me. That earned me more video games. My dad, I think one year he made me a bet. He said, "I bet you, for every touchdown you score, that I give you $10 per touchdown." And I was a smart kid.
That's the incentive right there.
Right. He gave me a little bit of incentive, and then I remember that for the whole season, I had 25 touchdowns that year. And so that was $250.
You were getting paid at an early age, man.
Well, my dad hit me with that. I said, "What?" I did the math. I put it down. I said, "Man, if I get 10 touchdowns, that's $100. You know, that was my goal, 100. But I went 20. I went obviously beyond my goal. I scored 25 touchdowns. And I was like, I think I was 9 or 10 years old at that time. So I went ham. And I spent that money. That was my Christmas money. And so I bought my mom something for Christmas, my dad something for Christmas, and bought me something for Christmas because I had enough money to spend, you know, spend around at the store, at the swap meet there. I said the Little League Park I played at when I started playing. So I played flag for a couple years, for 2 years, because my mom, she was too afraid of her baby boy to get hurt. And my dad was like, "No, he's tough. He can handle it." I watch him play in the front yard with the kids all the time, and some of the kids are bigger than him, so he comes out okay there. He said, "You don't have to worry about it." But for until then, I played flag football for 2 years, and then when I turned 8, that's when tackle football, helmet, shoulder pads, everything that we don't, that they don't wear over in Europe. a Blaze. So because they play rugby, they play the other football. They play rugby. Do they just?
I play football. We call it football in Dutch, but it's soccer for you guys. You know?
Right. Yep. So, that's when the tackle started, and then started to obviously grow up, and then baseball started a couple years after that when I was 10. So I was pretty much doing two sports year round. Come home on a long weekend or birthday party weekend, I'm playing video games. So it was always, so video games been there. It was just, in the back. It was just in my room on my own, something I didn't really bring up with people unless they were gamers too. And then it went from the, ColecoVision, Nintendo, and then the Sega Genesis, PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, the original Xbox, then Xbox 360, and on up. And, I'm sitting here now. I'm playing on the Xbox X Series, have a PlayStation 5. Lessons learned there. I had to
look at him having a PlayStation 5, huh?
I've been trying to get
you got some connections somewhere. I'm thinking,
I got a few connections.
He's got a guy,
I got a guy here, I got a guy there, and
talk about going back to what you're saying that like when I was growing up, that this is back when there was no cell phones and
right.
Everyone played football. Ours was called the lot, and every Saturday you came out, you squatted up, and you won. And if you lost, you couldn't wait till next Saturday, and it didn't matter. As soon as you were old enough to take a lick, you were playing with the 18-year-old kids. It didn't matter.
Exactly. And what was interesting that we got people from other neighborhoods calling us out. It was like, man, we heard about this street. We were on our street. Our street name, the actual street address was like 43rd and Vernon. And so people called us like pretty much Vernon or Lemert Park. That was our neighborhood. It's called Lemert Park. A very, nice neighborhood. It was like an oasis with all the gang stuff going on around us. Like when you get in our neighborhood, you're like, this is a gang neighborhood. It was just interesting to see it. And, but it was just one of the things that, like I said, the word spread by the time I was 10. I was like, how did it? This one guy came in. He actually drove to our neighborhood and said, we're going to play y'all tomorrow. We're like, what? This grown man in the car is going to send his kids? I hope it's him. Hope it's his kids, not him. I'm like, we're 10 years old. What are we going
to
be doing?
He's got a full beard. We heard about this squad. We're here to...
Right. It was crazy.
The funny thing is, I kind of live the same with soccer. So I grew up like on the edge of, also where it was gangs and less good stuff, and me and my friends played on a basketball court, and we played 5-on-5, and we had to hit the pole of the basketball to score a goal.
Right.
But it's a very, very technical game because normally you have big goals to score with a football,
Right.
And it was me. I was only me and one friend. We were the only white guys, and the rest were all Moroccans, Italians, Turkish people, from different countries, like immigrants.
Right.
And sometimes it was rough, and we had other neighborhoods playing against us. And like, if you scored, you stayed on the field, and the next team came, and there were like 6, 7, 8 teams waiting, And sometimes there were maybe fights, because you scored an incredible goal and the rest got mad or said you were cheating or whatever, or you made a foul. But, that goes along with it, And
exactly.
that was between when we were like 12 to 18 years old, almost, we did that.
So, and it sounds the same here. It was the same.
Yeah, and there's no warm-up for side lot football. We used to play get it and go. That's it. We're going to warm up, play some get it and go, or something like that, And then you're like, all right, now we got the squad. Let's do this. See you next Saturday. I'm going to get you,
Yeah. And ours was throw up tackle. That's what we called ours. We called it throw up tackle. We throw the ball up. So you throw the ball up, and then whoever catches the ball,
you're it. Run.
You're it. You're it. Yeah. And it depends on where you live. So that was on the West Coast. We called it throw up tackle. When I moved back to Nebraska, that's where I was born, it was smear the queer. I was like, what? I said, that's almost borderline not okay to say.
Yeah.
That is not okay.
Like a non-English person, that sounds actually really
That's
funny.
That's what they called
right.
it. And then someone was like, that's not right, but we'll call it get it and go. And we're like, all right. So they'd throw it up, you catch it, and you just run as many touchdowns as you could,
Yep.
About like, well, for me, I mean, once you get about three, you're like, all right, does someone tackle me, please? I want to give this ball up. I want to bring the pain.
No, you know, So for that point, I think one time I held the ball for, I ran the ball for 13 touchdowns before I gave it up or before I got tackled.
13. And that, you guys, is the reason why Amon Green made it to the NFL and I'm sitting here on a computer recording a podcast right there. That's the reason why. I was good, man.
I was like, I think I was 11 when that happened. And everybody was like, dude, you're in the zone. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm like, I'm just running until y'all tackle me. You know, I was running guys over, juking guys.
Okay, whatever. That got me laughing.
Right. I was just like, okay. I was humble. I wasn't really like worried about the stats. I just like, cool. I was like, I'm still not tackled. All right, I'm going to keep going. You know, I just looked at it. It was a game, you know, just like it is a game. It was a game. I was having fun with my friends and they're looking at me like, dude, what are you doing? You just possessed right now. And I'm like, well, this is the matter of the game. We're supposed to keep running until we score a touchdown. If we get tackled, then we give the ball up, but I haven't been tackled yet. So I'm gonna keep going.
Catch me if you can.
Yep. So. It was crazy. And cause I remember one time, one of my buddies got his parents, the video camera. And so he's like, yeah, man, we're going to videotape. This is like kind of the first, like a social thing, like media type thing happening. So he's like, man, this video game, us playing throw up tackle, our video game, videotape us playing throw up tackle. And we're like, yeah, cool, whatever. And so we played, we shot the video and then we went over one the guy's house to watch it. And we're sitting there watching the video. And we're all cracking up like, oh man, look at you. You look dumb. You look goofy. Da, 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 da. And I noticed, and one of the guys noticed, like, Amon, I'm running people over. I'm juking people. And I'm like smiling while I'm doing it. He's like, dude, why are you laughing? Why are you got a big smile on your face? I'm like, I don't know. I was like, I didn't even realize I had I mean, I'm cheesing from ear to ear, like in a big, like I'm about to eat a Big Mac sandwich or something. I'm big old smile on my face while I'm running dudes over. And I'm like, I didn't even notice that. I thought it was so weird.
Oh my God. Was that your recruiting tape? Is that what got you your scholarship?
No, definitely.
Is that tape? Here's the big thing. Is that tape still out there?
It probably is somewhere. I don't know where my guy, you know, if he still has it, but it's still out there somewhere.
Whoever's got it, you should title it, put it on YouTube and call it the Big Cheese Mac Truck or something, you know. And yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was wild. I grew up. We moved to LA when I was like 3.5, 4. And then that's where my mom met my stepdad. And then we moved to the neighborhood where it was Leimert Park. It was the little grass, patch of grass called the Island. And then, so that was all through elementary school, middle school, which I went to Audubon Junior High School, went to 42nd Elementary School. And we then right before I graduated middle school to go to high school, so I was going to go to Dorsey High School, which was a prominent high school at that time. Still pretty good high school in other sports. Like all their athletes are like really good athletes, Olympic athletes, football, baseball, basketball. They got phenomenal athletes, men and women, young men and women that come out that school. So I was going to go there, but I ended up finding out my mom taking us back to Nebraska. So of course I was like, what? You know, it's cold weather now. It was like, back in the mid snow. And I'm like, I haven't been there since I was a baby. And I'm like, who do I know here? You know, like, I don't know nobody. I'm being a kid, being all depressed, like this, the end of the world. And so we moved back when I was 13. And the funny thing was, so I thought it was interesting and it was cool. My mom was real lenient with me because my brother and sisters, they were the knuckleheads. They the ones that got in trouble all the time. They were having house parties. They were sneaking out the house. So I came along and then I was the good kid. So between that and then knowing that neighborhood that we grew up in and the high school I was going to end up going to, she was like, we're moving back to Nebraska because I don't want to deal with no more gangs and you're going to be playing sports. And you're going to be, you know, at the high school. And it's like some of the games I went to as a kid to watch Dorsey High School varsity team play, it would be shootouts, literally gunfire at the game. So we had to hit the deck. And so she was like, nah, I'm not going to go through your high school career worrying about bullets and you getting hurt on the football field. So we're moving back to Nebraska. So we get back to Nebraska. Like I said, I was a miserable teenager at that time, the first couple of weeks. And I was like, I don't know why my girlfriend left back. I left my girlfriend back in L.A. I'm all mad at my mom and dad. And then so we get there, we stay with my sister, my oldest is this our sister, and stay with her for a while, and then my mom and dad get our own place sooner after that. And then school starts, and at the time my brother, it was during the, like, right before school started, my brother took me to the high school all-star game. It was the North South Shrine High School Football All-Star Game. And I was going to play high school football that fall. I was thinking, anyway, at that time, I would play freshman football, maybe varsity, maybe JV. And once I saw the game, I'm like, I asked my brother, are these high school players? And he's like, yeah. He's like, they're juniors or they're seniors in high school that about to go to college. And I'm like, oh, okay. And because I'm like, these dudes are big. I'm like, man, these are big high school kids. And even though I watched the kids out in Los Angeles play high school football, I still was like, these kids are huge. So I was just like, okay. And I did the numbers. I'm doing my head. Okay, I'm 155. I'm 13 years old. That quarterback that I watched on the field, one of the players, he was 6 foot and 210. And I'm like, wait a minute. That don't add up. That's not good for me. If the quarterback is 200 pounds, how big is that guy? Oh, he's a linebacker. He's about 220. I'm like, what? I was like, how big is this guy? And it was like, oh, that's an offensive lineman. He's like 250. I'm like, what? These are big dudes. So I was like, bro, I said, you and dad may have to talk to the high school coach, because the high school coach had called me. He wanted me to try out on varsity. And I'm like, nah. I said, I love football, but I ain't dumb. I said, these dudes are huge. I was like, I'm going to get killed out here. And so he called. I had my dad and my brother. My dad actually talked to the coach and was like, well, Amon is going to hold off for one more year for varsity to play. And I'm like, all right. He was like, all right. And so I ended up playing Little League football one more year. And I played at the boys club, the boys and girls club. They had a football team that played. That was like a Little League team that plays against other park or teams around the city. And so I was like, cool, I'm going to play there. And I did. And we ended up, long story short there, we ended up winning the city championship. Myself and like all the team was like, just, we were stout. We were rock. We were packed. We had game. We had wide receiver that was fast. Myself, I was at running back and linebacker. The wide receiver played wide receiver and corner. Our quarterback played safety. We were just a goon squad. It was crazy. So we ended up winning the city championship. And then we had to play. What was great, what made us mad though, we went 12-1. We beat the team. The team that we beat, they were like the people that ran our league, and they said to us that, oh, to us to get the flat out championship, that we have to play their older team. So we were already 13. We're 12 and 13 year olds. So they're telling us that you didn't win. You did win, but if you truly want to win the city championship, you got to play this other team. And by the way, they're 15 years old. They're older and bigger than you. And we're like, you know, at this point, I don't care. I'm the team captain. I'm like, I'm pissed off because what coach just told me. I said, let's go where they want to play. I don't care where it is. We're going to come bust them in the mouth. And we did. We played them like a week after our championship. And we beat them. I want to say we beat them 56-14, or not even that, 56-0. We destroyed them. Because I was just like, nah. I said, nah, they straight cheated us. I said, they ain't right. They ain't right. And then, we end up fundraising money to go down to Daytona Beach, Florida, and we played in the Little League National Championships down there, and that was cool. We end up winning that game. We played two teams, actually. We played a team from Missouri, and then we played this team from New Jersey that was really, really good, but we ended up beating them. That one was a close game. I think we beat them like 21-17 or something like that. It was a tight game. It was fun too, just being in Florida. It was my first trip out of town without my mom and dad there. So that was pretty cool. That was pretty fun.
Oh.
So.
Man. Yeah, that's why I'm from Florida. So yeah, Florida, like Pop Warner's huge down here. Like, you know, you play Pop Warner and you're groomed to go to a different high school. You know, they find out where you're at. Oh, we're going to start running these offensive plays. But.
Yep.
Man, but those are.
Yeah, that's why I was in L.A. Because they knew I was going to be – I was at Baldwin Hills Park, and then I was at Culver City. But then they knew where I lived. They was like, okay, you're going to Dorsey. So they started recruiting me really early. And then, like I said, I moved back to Nebraska. And then when I came back, I actually did my combine training for the NFL in California, in Orange County, which is about 30 miles south of LA. And then I ran into some dudes that actually I played with or against. And they're like, man, where did you disappear? He's like, wait a minute. He's like, we saw you. We know you were playing Little League ball at this park. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, 1990, 1991, you disappeared. Then all of a sudden, we watching TV. We see you running down the field against Colorado. And you're in a Nebraska Cornhusker uniform. We're like, oh, there he is.
That's where he went.
It was so funny to hear that. I was like, yeah, that's what happened to me. I went back to the Midwest.
So obviously, stellar, stellar high school career. Highly recruited. You get offered a scholarship to play with one of the most prestigious coaches, coaching programs out there. One of the most respected coaches to this day. What is that like? I mean, what's the reaction that you have when, you know, when Dr. Tom Osborne says, we want you to go and play for us?
It's just a ode of respect. I mean, knowing what I knew at that time, going into, the recruiting world, you know, him already winning a national title, my senior, watching him play the year before, I was like, this is awesome. And just to see the guys that were like, we're all being compared to who's the best at the position. Like at the time, it was Sean Alexander, Kevin Falk, who else? I got the poster right next to me. Kevin Falk, Sean Alexander, DeAndre Hardiman, Randy Moss, Dan Kendra. We had a good, you know, and that was the All-American team that year. That was just crazy. And to be in that same, knowing what those guys did, it was just crazy. And then just having him, you know, Coach Osborne recruit you and come to your house, talk to your family and your mom and dad is just it was just like, wow. And I was like, this is special. I had earned and other players like myself had earned the opportunity to get recruited by a guy that was, you know, or other guys like Tom Osborne, Steve Spurrier, Lou Holtz, other college football coaches that were popular or famous at that time. It was just something that all the hard work since those Little League days, since the days playing in the neighborhood in L.A., it was now coming to light because it was just that time was that development I was able to have and get by playing against the guys in my neighborhood. It started then, but then on the Little League, then the high school football in Nebraska was just, like I said, all the hard work paying off, basically.
How many schools did you have coming after you?
Literally everybody. I say, how many schools are in the United States? University, I say D1, D2. How many?
I mean, well, D1 schools.
Yeah, I would say all the D1 schools, all the Power 5, as they call them now, all the Power 5 schools sent me at least one letter to introduce themselves, to want me to come to their school, to want me to be, you know, part of their roster. There's some deals of a few Division 3 local Nebraska schools, local Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, because I was a Midwest kid, Kansas, you know, but every Power 5, so Pac-12, back at that time, Pac-10, at that time, Big 10, Big 8, SEC, ACC. You know, I remember the one letter it was special. And I don't know if I still have it. My mom maybe might have kept it. But I remember I had a handwritten letter from Bill Walsh in pencil.
Oh.
It was in pencil. Four pages written to me. And I'm a high school senior reading this letter. And I just knew, who Bill Walsh was because I grew up a 49er fan because of my stepdad.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Okay. And I say for Blaze, this is like David Beckham writing you a letter to ask you to come to his school to play soccer.
Yeah, I got
it. You feel me? That's how crazy that was. It was like, oh my god!
Yeah, just hearing that, I'm like, I'm getting like,
I would rather say Zinedine Zidane writing you to come and play for Real Madrid, you know? But
there you go, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or like Lionel Messi saying, hey, I want you to come live with me and you're going to play with me, stuff like
you're
that.
Train. I'm going to train you. We're going to get you for the EuroLeague.
How many people know that story, though?
A few. Obviously, my mom and dad, because my mom and dad, you know, they were at the house. I said, Dad, look at this letter. He's like, I showed him who it was. He's like, what? Because, you know, we grew up. He was a coach for the 49ers back in the early 80s and most of the 80s. And
Joe Montana, Dwight Clark, Roger Craig.
Yeah, Roger Craig, Barry Rice, John Taylor, Ronnie Lott.
Yeah.
Guy McIntyre, all of them.
I feel like a little schoolgirl right now just hearing that story because, like I said, I'm 48. So
you're always a little schoolgirl.
So, yeah, I mean, just hearing that, you know, because, like, I'm trying to think, like, was your quarterback Tommy Frazier?
Yep. I had Tommy Frazier in my freshman
Tommy Frazier. Yeah, he was, he's from Florida. That's why I was like, I'm trying to remember
Bradenton.
That. And I was like,
he's from Bradenton, Florida.
And I was like, Tommy, I'm just going through and I was like, because I love college football like no other, you know, but just hearing that, I was like, you look at these people that is like the one team you never wanted to meet in the Super Bowl back then was a Bill Walsh 49ers team.
Right.
And you're just like, just to hear you got a 4-page letter from him. Wow. That is. Oh, okay. You know, anyway. All right.
Yeah, it was special. It was like that. So it was just stuff like that. And me being a sports fan growing up, I kept that stuff. That was like awesome to me. And I didn't really tell at the time. I was very quiet, humble kid. So I didn't talk about that stuff. So my only person that knew at that time was my dad because he was at home that day. Other than that, I wouldn't have told anybody. My brothers didn't even know. They're like, dude, man, why you didn't tell us? Because years later, they had me talk about it in an interview. They're like, dude, why you didn't tell us that you had a written letter from Bill Walsh? We would have framed it or whatever. I'm like, to me, it was like, I was like, I didn't realize the weight of it, you know, being a kid and being a young teenager. I was very humble. So I didn't tell my mom and dad a lot of things that I did, good and bad. Like sometimes my mom would get a letter from the school saying, oh, that, you know, your son is on the honor roll. And she'd be like, she's like, why you didn't tell me about this? I'm just like, how long did you know about it? I was like, oh, I learned about it like last week. They told me at school. And like stuff, I didn't like bring it up because I don't know. I just didn't do it. And then part of me was like, it wasn't that I wanted to be like braggadocious about stuff I did, you know, or I didn't want to be like cocky. And I think that was part of me and not to really talk about it. But it was like some of this stuff was important because, like, you know, they're having a banquet, you know, I'm getting an award at a banquet for something. And my dad and mom and just finding out, they're like, boy, why you didn't tell me this? You know, you got this coming up, man. Like, I don't know. I'm sorry about that.
My bad.
It did cross my mind. Hey,
So you get the letter. Dr. Tom Osborne comes and says, I want you to play at the University of Nebraska and be a Cornhusker.
Yep.
Being in Nebraska, that has probably got to be like the ultimate, you know, like you want to play for your home state big university. So
yeah, it's huge. And so, yeah, that was like every kid's that's from Nebraska dream to do. And so, and it's so serious, like you said, it's heavy. It's so serious. Like Tim Ritter, he was on our team. He was a recruit. He ended up going to Notre Dame, but he was from another local high school. He went to Creighton Prep High School, and he decided to go to Notre Dame. And literally, his family was getting death threats and getting threatened that they needed to move out of the state of Nebraska just because he committed to go to college to Notre Dame.
I'm a Buckeye fan. So, like, we don't say the name of the school up north. And if you're from if you're from Ohio and you commit to that school, you might as well just move. And if you're from the school up north and you come to Ohio, then your like family is like frowned upon, like you're the worst thing in the whole wide world. So yeah.
Wow.
I can only imagine. So
yep. I was aware of that, but I still wanted to, you know, make sure I took all my visits, which I did. I took my visits to Nebraska, to Notre Dame, Michigan, and Arizona, because Arizona was a really good team at that time. Yeah, Dick told me as the head coach. They were the Desert Swarm defense. They had Teddy Bruschi and a guy and a strong safety by the name of Spurlock. It was really good. And so it was just something. Oh, they were considering me playing either both ways, running back and or linebacker. But it came down to Nebraska in the end, because they had, you know, they wanted one. They fit one of my goals was winning a national title. That's what I wanted to do. And a team that just won it the year before, and they beat Miami in Miami. So that means I could come to this team and make it better. I didn't know how I was going to make it better, but I knew I could. I knew I could make it better. And so that was like my first goal that was already checked off the box, was that I want to go to a school where I can win a national title now and not, you know, and help out. And so that's what I did. I basically was wanted to help out the roster that was already there and get and make them better. And, but you know, that was just in my head. You just come in and I wasn't even thinking about training camp, what I had to do there, but it was football. I played it since I was, you know, 6 years old. So I knew the idea of what I needed to do and what else that needed to get done from a physical standpoint. But now it's just, you know, learn the plays, learn the playbook, learn my teammates, get to know them, which they were a whole bunch of great guys, phenomenal athletes, but even goofier dudes off the field, you know, that you end up loving and like adopting as a brother. You know, it was just awesome. So, you know, Lawrence Phillips, Tommy Frazier, Grant Lindstrom, Phil Ellis, Tony Veland. Tony Veland was the quarterback who I referred to when I was a freshman in high school. And he was on the, he was played quarterback in high school and strong safety. He was the guy that was one of the guys that feared, that scared me out of football my freshman year, out of playing high school football.
Look at now, we're on the same team.
Yeah, we were. It was a, it was cool. So it was just one of them things that I was like, I want to be a, I want to do big things. You know, I want to win games. I want to win championships. I had done it. And like Little League, really, I didn't talk about that, but Little League, my first year of flag football, we won the championship. My second year of Little League flag football, we won the championship. First year of baseball, we won. Actually, for baseball, I played 4 years of Little League baseball. Every year, we won a championship. We won the city championship. And then 1 year I played tackle football at Culver City, we went to the playoffs, and that team hadn't been to the playoff in like years. And so it was just something that hadn't happened in a long time for the Culver City Lancers at that time. When I got back to Nebraska, I played, like I mentioned, I played on that Little League team, the North Omaha Boys Club Bears. We won the city championship, and then we won that Little League championship down in Florida that winter. And so I knew how to win. I knew what winning took. You know, it's just hard work, dedication, leadership, accountability, you know, doing the things you're told to do. And do them to the best of your ability. So all that was, by the time I was 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, it was like breathing for me. So I knew how to prepare. I knew how to work out. I knew how to get my sleep. I wasn't messing around in the dorm rooms. I was there to win games. I was there to get my education. And so, because a lot of people just thought, okay, he's spoiled because he's a good athlete. He has everybody giving him stuff because he did this, that, and the other. I'm like, no, I earned everything I got. Even now at my age now and doing what I'm doing now, I earned it. It's not been easy. Everybody from family members to coaches to teachers to teammates to classmates, they know that about me. They know I'm humble. They know I don't try to one-up somebody, make them look bad, you know, be cocky. I want to have fun at the end of the day, but I'm not going to do it on the expense of somebody else. I'm going to have fun, make sure everybody else is having fun. If we're playing Madden, if we're playing 2K, we're playing Halo, if we're playing Among Us, you know, I'm going to make sure, you know, everybody's having a good time. And I don't want people, because it, you know, was funny. I say things that a lot of people don't know. I haven't talked about a whole lot is that I was the kid at the school that beat up the bully, literally. It was this bully that was a gang member at my elementary school, at 42nd Elementary. His name was Gregory, and he was a good-sized kid. You know, he was not the average, 10, 11-year-old kid. He was good. He had good size to him. It looked like he lift weights or worked out a little bit. I don't know if he played sports. I did, though. So me and him, you know, physically, we probably matched up. But one day, he sees me. I don't know what got him to think, okay, you know, I'm picking on Amon today. I'm going to take his lunch money. And if you know one thing about me, guys, I like to eat.
Okay? Don't take his lunch money.
Okay. Don't mess with my lunch money. So he's like on me. He's beefing on me. He's pushing me a little bit. Hey, what's up? You know, give me my lunch money. I said, you want what? I want your lunch money. I said, no, that's a problem. Because I said to him, no, that's a problem. I like to eat. And he's like, well, I'm gonna beat you up then. I'm like, well, you're gonna have to earn it because you're just not gonna beat me up for my lunch money. And he's like, all right, we'll fight at the school then. It's straight out to the movies. Fight at the school at 3:00. I'm like, I've seen this before in the movie. I know I have. Why is this dude saying this to me? You know, I'm saying this in my head, of course. I'm not saying this out loud. I'm like, he sounds straight out of a movie I just seen. And sure enough, everybody's like, man, 3:00. Amon and Gregory outside the school by the baseball diamond.
It's about to go down.
Man, it was hype. It was like, what's his name? Was it Don King? The big dude. The other dude that said, let's get ready to rumble him. They were hyping it up from like 11:00 to 2:30. Every class I went in, or I had elementary, it was only one class, but every time lunch recess, they're like, Amon, you going to win? I'm like, man, I don't know. I'm like, but he ain't taking my lunch money, but I don't know if I'm going to win, but I know how to protect myself. Oh, okay. They thought I was like on trash talk. I'm like, nah. But then we get out there, and it's just like, first we're back, you know. Well, I don't know what y'all called it, but we called it bagging. We're basically playing the dozen, talking about each other.
Oh, yeah, the dozens. Like, yeah.
We're doing the dozen. So we're talking about each other's mama, talking about how ugly they look. Look at the shoes. They whack. And me, I was bad at it. So I can't even remember what I said. I know it was terrible because I could not do that. I was not good at bagging on people. And of course, he was kind of good. So everybody's like, ooh, you talking about your mama, man. I'm like, man, whatever. So I'm like, in my head, I'm like, when is this dude going to throw a punch? What's up? When we going to get this? When this fight going to happen? Because we're just talking about each other right now. And so finally, he looked at me. He squared off on me. He raised his hands a little bit. I said, okay, here it go. I'm ready for it. I've been ready to fight. So I'm like, all right, here he is. So he picks up his fist, put him in boxing position, and he takes a swing. And he swings. I dodge it, and then I just counter him right to the jaw, you know, right in his chin. And I dropped him, like, on the first punch. And everybody's like, you could hear a pin drop. They're like, nothing.
Don't mess with my lunch money.
Right. They like, did he just punch Gregory? Like, okay. And then I hit him again. Bop, bop, bop. I just kept hitting him. And then he got up. He knocked me down. And he got on top of me for, like, two punches. But then I kicked him off again. And it basically, it didn't, like, the way the fight ended, if the fight ended with me punching him a couple more times in the face, and then one of my friends grabbing me off of him, and then us walking away because I think he saw the teachers coming. So I pretty much won the fight. Everybody was like, oh, I'm gonna beat down Gregory. Oh, man. They were going crazy. I was like, man, if I would have put money on it, I would have been rich that day as a kid. But yeah, it was like I didn't, you know, my brothers, the way my mom and dad raised me, my brothers raised me was like, you know, picking on people is not cool. And he was picking on me, but I seen him pick on other people too. And this, he just came around to me, and I'm like, all right, I got to handle this. I was like, because I wasn't raised this way to, you know, try to take advantage of younger people or somebody stronger or weaker than you, you know, that he thought I was weaker than him. He thought I was going to back down. He thought I was going to just hand over my lunch money. And I said, no, man, you got to come earn this, bro. You know, I'm not going to just, I like to eat. That's what I said to him. I like to eat. And,
oh my God.
And so that was like the first time I actually had to fight a bully. A few grades later, it was this one kid. I remember this one kid named Adam. And Adam this was like third or second grade. And so that fight happened with Gregory in the fifth grade. So this is at the same school a couple years earlier. It was this new kid at school. And you know, if you're the new kid at school, how it is. Most of the time it sucks because everybody's looking at you sideways. They give you this stink eye. So we had this kid named Adam start school. He was a big kid. He was a tall kid. He was a big, like when I say big, he was an overweight kid. And so people in my classroom and around the school, you know, they see him walking down the hallway. They're calling him all the bad nicknames of being somebody overweight. And I'm hearing this stuff, and I'm just shaking my head. I'm like, man, they not right. So what I did, you know, I had been at the school. This is my second. Actually, this was like third grade. So I've been there for 2 years. So a lot of kids knew me, but they know I didn't I didn't talk a whole lot. I was shy, but I played sports. I played kickball, handball, baseball, and recess and lunch. So, and the teachers knew me. So when I saw these kids calling him names, and I see him, you know, Bob looked like he was about to cry. I just went up to him and said, "Hey, man, what's up?" I said, "My name's Amon, and where you?" It was like lunchtime, and I said, "Where you eating at? Let's sit down. I'll sit with you or whatever." I just sat with him, and then every day I sat with him after that. You know, I was then we became friends. You know, because he had to find out, you know, if I was real too, because everybody had been picking on him. You know, and I was just having a conversation with him. "Hey, man, how was school today? You know, how was? Do you play video games? What sports do you play?" You know, and because I knew what was going on, and I was like, I can't have him feel alone, you know, because everybody's picking on him. Everybody, you know, he was really dark skinned, so they were calling him, you know, telling him, I mean, just terrible things because he's how dark his skin was, and it was just like, and this school was predominantly African American kids, and they were teasing him because they were darker. He was darker than them. It was just unbelievable to me as a 10-year-old or 8-year-old. I was like, nah, I can't sit here and not do nothing. So I became his friend. And then once, after about a couple weeks of me always recessing lunch with Adam, eating lunch, playing games, you know, even we weren't in the same classroom, but at recess, we had the same recess and lunchtime. So every time we were out there, we were playing video, we were playing handball, dodgeball together. I made sure I picked him first no matter what, because I knew other people didn't pick him. So I made sure I picked him, or we just kicked it together all the time. And then people started to become his friend because they saw me hanging out with him. And I guess that to them made it okay, I guess. I don't know. I didn't care. I was like, look, at least he gonna have one friend. It's going to be Amon. And I felt, you know, as a kid, that was probably my duty, because it was just, I didn't like the people being picked on. I didn't like people basically being discriminated against or whatever at that age. You know, what I saw as a kid, I was like, that's not right to pick on him. So, yeah, I became buddies with him. And for most of the time at school, and then he ended up transferring out a couple years later before we graduated elementary school. But I always think about him, like, what he's doing now. I don't remember his last name because I would have been looked him up. I just couldn't remember his last name.
So, Adam, if you're out there and you hear this, reach out to Amon. Just let him know how you're doing. So, so you obviously go through, you have a stellar collegiate career. Mm-hmm. You graduate in, what, 97? Right.
I say if I would have stayed 4 years, I would have graduated in 1998. So 97 was my junior year. I went pro after my junior year.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I'm just sitting here and I was like, okay. So you leave University of Nebraska, and you combined that in the OC. And what did you run in the 40? Gotta know what you ran in the 40.
All right, well, there's two of them. Actually, 340s I ran. I ran the one at the combine. I went to Indianapolis, and I ran a 4.49. I had a pulled groin, though. I just pulled my groin literally like a week before the combine. And I'm like, oh, my God. It's like pulling a hamstring or something like that. And my agent said, just run anyway. Just go. You know, still run. He said, can you run routes and stuff? I was like, yeah, but it's going to be sore as heck. Their growing muscle is like what helps you, you know, juke and accelerate. So I'm like, all right. So I just went anyway, and I ran a 4.49 at my combine workout. I caught 18 of 20 passes because they didn't think I could catch the ball being a Nebraska running back, and all the rumors. And then I went back home, healed up, went to my pro day. I had my pro day in Lincoln, and then on my pro day, I ran a 4.17 and a 4.18.
Oh,
4.17 seconds and 4.18 seconds.
Okay, and I caught seven.
That's fast.
That's all on ass. That's all on ass. I'm just going to. Holy cow. You said a what, 4.49
with a pulled groin? A 4.49 at the combine, yeah.
With a pulled groin. All right.
With a pulled groin.
I couldn't do that in a wheelchair. I'm going to put that out there. That's just remarkable. So, I mean, still remarkable. I mean, that's an awesome combine. That's an awesome pro day stats. So draft day comes. Yeah.
All right. So yeah, I do that. And I remember at my pro day, you know, you had David Halstead. He was the Miami coach at that time. The Chiefs were there. I believe the Packers were there. Raiders were there. I'm not sure if the Seahawks were there, but I remember those teams, seeing those teams and the coaches, some scouts, some head coaches were there. I remember pro day. I jumped a 41.5 vertical. I jumped, the broad jump was 11, and a half feet. I bench press 225 38 times. I think I did it 38 times.
Ooh.
And I caught 17 to 20 passes. You know, and this is coming from a running back that they said that couldn't catch the ball out the backfield because he was an option running back. But when you think about it, they didn't really think about this. This is where NFL scouts is sketchy to me back at, especially in that time, and still sketchy today. You're talking about an option running back. And if you think about that, that means I got to catch the ball running laterally full speed. And you're telling me I can't catch the ball? When I got Tommy Frazier and Scott Frost, where they're running full tilt and we're running laterally to each other and they pitch a ball running full speed and I got to catch it and tuck it and get ready to hit or get ready to outrun somebody or run somebody out. And then you telling me I can't catch a flat route or a slant or a drag route. I'm like, those are my easy routes. I was like, catching the option pits is total focus. You're multitasking. You're running one way where you're not looking what's in front of you. You're looking to your left or right. Because as soon as you catch the ball, basically you could get blown up by somebody. And you're waiting to find out if the pitch is going to be high, low, or behind you. You want it perfect, right? It's right in your breadbasket. But sometimes that ball comes behind you. That means you got to one-hand it. It goes low. You got to one-hand it there. I caught pitches behind the back of my head that was up high and to the right or to the left. So it was just interesting how the scouts thought I could not catch the ball and couldn't receive the ball.
Yeah, and not only that, you don't even know if you're going to even get the ball an option, if it's even going to come to you. So you got to be ready at any time. So
exactly.
So draft day, you get a phone call. Seattle Seahawks.
Yep.
What was that moment like, saying, congratulations, Amon, you're now Seattle Seahawks?
It was one of the moments that as a, you know, NFL player or professional athlete, you're waiting to hear if it was baseball, basketball that I decided to play, because now it's telling you where the next chapter of your life is going to start. And the only down part, it wasn't even down part. It was just like it's another detail of that aspect, because going into the draft, I was told I was going to get drafted higher. Like I was told, I think maybe by a committee that said, okay, you'll get drafted first round, low first round, high second round. And that was the whole reason I based my decision off of, because whatever I thought it was a real evaluation of my value to the NFL that, okay, these people are professionals. They're telling me that I could get drafted in the first round. That's worth going pro. That's worth leaving your college, because you're talking about on a bare minimum, you're going to have $2-3 million if you drafted as the 29th pick, you know, and that's a game changer for life. You know, that is financially a game changer. So I'm like, yes, but then I get drafted in the third round and running a 4.1, which had been probably the fastest 40 since Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson. And I get drafted third round. So that to me was a little heartbreaking because of the hard work I know I had put in for that. But at the end of the day, I said, you know what? Okay, I'm on the team. I'm like, I got this big old chip on my shoulder. A lot of people about to get blown up. I'll say a whole people's world about to get shattered because they missed on whoever. And it was like every team in the NFL. That means they passed on me twice, including the Packers, including the Seahawks. They just going to take a couple years where they don't get it because I'm on that team right now. But every team that passed on me, they getting it. That's what I told myself. When I get the ball, when I'm playing against the Packers, when I'm playing against the Bears, when I'm playing against the Chiefs, when I'm playing against the Chargers, when I get that ball, they're going to see what they passed on when they see me running ball. That was in my head from the time I got drafted to basically the end of my career. That was in my head because that's how I felt, is that they passed on me because they thought I couldn't be the running back, NFL quality running back. I always heard that, he's not NFL level. He can't do this. He can't do that. That's all I heard before I got on the football field and before I got drafted. And you already talked about it, you know, while I was on your fantasy team, you know, that I was a game changer. So it was just interesting to me, these commentators that always talking like Mel Kiper Jr., one of them with his hair slicked back, don't know a thing about football.
He don't know hair.
One.
Mel, can we
get
you
just got hair. He know how to do his hair real good. Yeah. That's it. So yeah.
He's a diva, right? Junkett always calls me Blaze Diva.
Yeah, that's definitely Kiper for sure.
Yeah.
He's definitely a diva.
So you spent a couple years in Seattle, obviously going from the man to not getting as much playing time. You want to prove to everybody that they made a mistake. And 2 years in Seattle, it's over. And then you land in one of the most prestigious teams in all of NFL history. It doesn't matter. You land in Green Bay. All of a sudden, I mean, let's just look at your stats. Your first 2 years, you probably had rushing 329 yards. I mean, still, you averaged 6 yards, 4.6.
Yep, and that's very good.
So your first year in Green Bay, you make those teams pay. You make them with all the regrets in the whole wide world for not selecting Amon Green and run it up 1,175 yards your first full year in Green Bay.
Yeah, and so, I didn't only started 10 games or 8 games that season. Me and Dorsey Levins, Dorsey was the starter. I was his backup
for
half of that season.
So, I mean, that's just still, so now it's game time and you're just like, okay, now is when you're getting you're making these teams pay and you're making them pay big. And it wasn't like you said, you weren't just running the ball, you're receiving the ball. You know, you're looking close to your first season, you have 560 yards receiving out of the backfield. So you're what they said you weren't going to be.
Exactly.
And like you said, your goal was to make them pay, and you did. I mean, whew. Okay. Nope. That's just, you know, you sit and you think about it, like you know, like I had you on my fantasy team. I knew that I'm going to get points out of Amon Green no matter what. He's, and like you said, we did in our little preach, you know, he was in every, the only time he came off the field when you're playing, when you're starting is, I don't know, catch a drink, catch a breather, and then you're back in.
That's it. And Coach Sherman made sure that he would have a heart attack. Mike Sherman was the coach then, and he would have a heart attack if I came off the field ever. And so between Kippy Brown, who was my first running backs coach, and then Edgar Bennett, who was my last running backs coach here, by the time it got to Edgar Bennett, you know, he played in the NFL. He was on the Super Bowl team in 1996. So he understood being a running back and how we needed to take breaks. We have to catch our breath. We're human. So he strategized a plan with Mike, with Coach Sherman. He said, all right, coach, this is what we're going to do. He's like, Amon cannot play literally every down in the game. He's like, because he would want, that's what in his head, he's like, Mike Sherman, in his head, I could play every down. Literally every offensive play, every offensive snap, which is not realistic. So Edgar Bennett said, look, this is what we'll do. Once we, you know, get the ball, somebody kicks off to us, we get the ball between the 20s. So from 20 to 20, that's when Amon could take his breaks. Once we got to the red zone, regardless of how he feels, he'll stay in then. Because, you know, that's the money time. That's where you got to score points, or that's where you got to help your team, you know, Brett to throw a touchdown, pick up the blitz, whatever. And I'm like, I could deal with that at least. At least give me that. At least I know between, there's 80 yards of time where 80 yards of field, I could take a rest where I could catch my breath for two or three plays. Najee, Tony could go in and help me out. And so that's what we did. That's what helped me through those years from 01 to basically 06. That was a game changer because then I wasn't feeling all worn out. I mean, I was used to already hitting and banging, but now I feel at least I knew I had something to fall back on. I had my two teammates. I had Najee Davenport, Tony Fisher that were my backups, and they knew that. They understood their role, and they were okay with that, you know. And that's what made it click. That's what made it work.
And I mean, and like, you know, like we've said, it's not like the NFL isn't. You're not playing against guys that are like 180 pounds, you know. I mean, you're playing against guys almost every down that literally can bench press a car at any point in time, you know, and their goal is to put it on you, you know,
literally.
And like that, we don't want to see this guy running the ball anymore. You know, we want him to like, you want him to take a quarter off, you know, figure out, you know, what his name is when we're done with him kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Let me tell you this story about kind of what you just said. said there, Junk. My first year here in Green Bay, my first game down in Chicago against the Bears. And early in the preseason, I had sprained my MCL against the Broncos. So I had a big old knee brace on. I didn't like it, but I had to wear it. And I understood because it just helped my knee stay a little bit more stable while I was running. And so the game before the Bears game in Chicago that season, the brace came off and I was so happy. I was like, bet. So that week before, I didn't have the brace all week long. My knee felt great. We're in the game down in Soldier Field. We're having a good game. We're up on them and we're about to go up again. We're up, I think, 7-0 or 7-3. And we're in the red zone. We're about to go up on them again. And I'm probably like on the 10-yard line. I get like a big run. Actually, like on the 20, and I get the ball, run the ball down to the goal line, like the one. And then I get hit. Mike Brown, my old college teammate, he hit me low. And so my knee, he tweaked my knee again. I'm like, oh man. So I come to the sideline. So this is right before halftime. So when I come out to play, of course, the Bears defense are like, oh my God, he's out. Good. All right. He's off the field. Nice. But Brett throws a touchdown the next play to Antonio Freeman. So we go into halftime. We're up 14-3 or 14-0. I'm already in the locker room, and everybody, you know, the trainers are on me. Coach Sherman comes in there. Is Amon okay? You know, what can we have him back? He's like, yeah, no problem. So he did a Pat McKenzie is our team doctor. He did his little ACL, MCL, MCL test, PCL test. I mean, and he's like, Amon, how's it feel? I said, just a little sore. He said, but I got to put the brace. He said, well, okay, if you want to go back in, you got to put the brace back on. I'm like, oh, I said, I just came out that thing. Come on. He's like, no. He said, if you want to finish this game, he says, for your safety. I'm like, all right, okay, as you put it like that, no problem. So put it back on, and I get back on the field. Like, we get the ball at a second half, and I run the ball the first play. I get the ball probably like a 5-yard gain. I get tackled, and Mike Brown's like, man, what? He said, what you doing out here, man? I thought we put you out. This is my teammate from college, you know? He's like, man, we thought we hurt you. We was like that. He said, man, you back out here. I said, so as soon as he said that, I was like, yeah, I ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
I ain't going nowhere. The rest of this game, we killed them. We killed them that game.
Oh, yeah. Man.
So.
Go ahead.
I see Bears fans all the time. My wife's a Bears fan. You know, I run into Bears fans all the time. And they always tell me, or ask me, you know, man, they say this to me. They tell me this. They say, Amon, I hated you, but we respect you at the same time. You were the best running back that the Packers had during your era. We could not stop you. We couldn't find nobody to stop you. Even they had Brian Urlacher. They had Lance Briggs. These were Pro Bowl Hall of Fame linebackers. Could not slow us down, you know. But it wasn't just me. You know, it was offensive lineman, my fullback, William Henderson, Mike Wall, Mike Flanagan, Chad Clifton, Mark Tauscher, Kevin Berry, Marco Rivera, those guys, my linemen. So, but they was like, man, why would you run so hard against us? And I was like, I know you didn't like the Lions. I know you didn't like the Vikings. I said, yeah, true. I said, but the two things that got me extra pumped up to run against the Bears, home or away, it didn't matter in Soldier Field or Lambeau Field, I was going to run hard against the Bears all the time for these two reasons. One reason was, I was a Walter Payton fan growing up. And so my brothers showed me old Payton film. And they said, if you're going to be a running back, this is how running backs run the ball, period. If you're going to be a running back, you look at this guy. So to you, Blaze, it's like, if you're going to be a soccer player, you're going to study Lionel Messi. This is how you play soccer. You know, that's how Walter Payton was
sweetness.
To me.
Sweetness.
Yes, sweetness. His nickname was Sweetness. Does Messi have a nickname?
No, I don't think
so. Just call him Messi.
Oh, Messi. I know they call him Messi for short over here. So
yeah.
I took his game. In his game, he was a blunt instrument. He was blunt force. He run people over, and then he maybe outrun you, but he wasn't blazing fast. But I had the speed, and I had the blunt force. So that was one reason I ran hard against the Bears, because to me, even though I never met him, over the years, I have met his wife, his son, Jarrett, his daughter, Brittany, and son, his wife, Connie. So to me, run hard for the Bears was like paying respect to one of the people in my life that he wasn't aware, but he helped me become who I was as a football player, as a running back. I respect his game. So I was like, I got to run hard against the Bears no matter what, because he would have run hard again. He ran again hard against the Packers when he played. So that was my ode to him. Then number two was Mike Brown. Remember, he was a strong safety for the Bears. He was my teammate in college for 2 years. He would trash talk me so much in pregame warm-up. You know how you go out, put your headsets on, and you jog around. You bring a football with you to play catch by yourself, whatever. I'll be doing that. He's, man, we're going to kill y'all today. We're going to put you out the game. We're going to put Brett out the game. And if we don't, Brett going to throw in 5 interceptions. You're going to fumble the ball 12 times. I'm like, Mike.
Thanks for the incentive. Thanks for the incentive.
Exactly. I'm like, you know me. Don't rattle my cage. You already know I'm going to run you over. You already know I'm going to run hard. I'm going to play for 4 quarters. I'm going to do whatever I got to do to win. Okay. You just want to piss me off. No problem. Okay. We're going to make this really. You're making it real easy for me to just run you over every time I see the other number 30 in blue and orange. That's all you're doing. And that was the two reasons that when I play against the Bears, it was lights out, period. And you could blame Mike Brown for that.
So Bears fan, it's Mike Brown's fault. So,
yep.
Like I said, we want to thank you for coming on. We'd love to have you on because there's more to your story. Like now you're with Lakeland University. You're an eSport manager. Yeah. So we would love to have you back so you can tell that part of the story anytime. You're more than welcome because it just goes to show the evolution of sports that's connected to video gaming industry and content creation across the board is phenomenal and it's synonymous and it's one big symbiotic relationship. So exactly. We know you got to go do stuff. And thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. And honestly, I'm really curious about the second part. So I hope we have you back soon.
Oh, yeah, we could do it real soon.
You guys stay tuned for part two. So once again, thank you each and every one of you guys. Whatever podcast platform you're listening to it on, make sure you guys are giving us a good 5-star rating. Thumbs up. Tell your friends, your brother, sisters, cousins, roommates, his uncle, their aunt from around the way. It doesn't matter. And once again, thank you, Amon, for coming on and telling your story.
You're welcome.
And I look forward to hearing part two.
Thanks for having me. So I can't wait. It's going to be good.
It's going to be real good. So once again, you guys have a great one. Remember, be positive to each other. Pick each other up when you're down and get out there and game. Because if you ain't gaming, you better be fragging. Because if not,
you're probably lagging.
Mom! Mom! Get the camera! I gotta kill! Mom, I gotta kill! Oh yeah, baby! Oh, mommy, I gotta kill! Finally, after 250 games sitting in a corner, I'm dying to the gas!